And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could join us. We're going to do things a little bit differently on today's program. We're going to get you set for the preseason finale between the Giants and the Patriots. A little bit later on, Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record, will join us. We'll break down things with respect for the Giants roster. And we're also going to take a look around the NFC East as we are inching closer to the 2017 season. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants chat. But right off the top, we are now joined by Jason Cole, who covers the National Football League for the Bleacher Report, to take a closer look at the NFC East. Jason, Lance Meadow, Jeff Fiegels with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything is great. How are you?
Doing very well, Jason. Well, let's start big picture perspective here with respect to the NFC East. And I think it's interesting when you look at the history and you look at the track record of this division, no team has repeated as division champs until the Eagles won four in a row in the early 2000s. When you look at the outlook of this division, how much separation, how much of a disparity do you see within the four teams?
Oh, not a lot. I think that the team that wins that division is probably going to be at 11 victories, and I think the team that ends up last place is going to be at 7 or 8. So I think it's going to be tight all the way through. I don't think there's one team that's going to completely fall out of it. I don't think that there's any team that's going to run away with it. Now, I think that the Giants are probably the best of the group, but not so far out ahead that it's a laydown, basically.
Well, you know, you go and look at this division, starting with the Giants. Not a lot of activity in free agency in the sense of what they did the year before with the defense, but you know, certainly on offense, some good key additions there. And then you go down the turnpike from here to the Eagles. They certainly have improved themselves a little bit. They got a running back in Blunt. So, you know, in the Redskins, they lose a bunch of guys. I don't know how many guys they've added to them. But, you know, Jason, when you look at the competitiveness in this division, I agree with you. Who do you think are the top two teams that you feel would, and do you think that maybe one of those or two of those teams would make the playoffs this year, in your opinion?
Two of them. Let's think about the rest of the divisions. You're going to have Green Bay probably come out of the North. I think you're going to have two teams come out of the South, because I think that's the best overall division.
Sure.
From top to bottom. And then you're probably going to have two teams come out of the West, because you've got two bottom feeder teams in San Francisco and Los Angeles that are going to artificially boost where Arizona and Seattle, you know, where their victory totals look like. So if you go with two in the South and two in the West, and then you've got one coming out of the North, that only leaves one for the East. Mm-hmm. Now, that could change a little bit. I don't think there's a great deal of separation there, but I would say that it's going to be tough to get two teams out of the East, because I think that those teams are going to beat up on each other so much. So again, I see one team winning this division at 11-5, next team at 10, and so the question is that 10 going to be better than some other division's 10?
And the Giants know from a few years ago when they had 10 victories and they just missed out on the playoffs, they were tied with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You mentioned that they're probably going to beat each other up. Plus, you take into consideration the NFC East gets the AFC West as well as the NFC South, Jason, and you even mentioned you think that that's a pretty steep division. In terms of the Cowboys, one of the biggest storylines right now is Ezekiel Elliott's pending appeal of his suspension. And there's a lot of speculation that in the event it doesn't go according to plan, maybe it doesn't get lessened or it stays put, that he would fight this legally. What do you think the chances are, Jason, that he will be actually suiting up for the Cowboys in week one in the opener against the Giants?
Oh, I think it's at best a 25% chance that he's going to be playing in week one. Because I don't know that the court, any kind of court, is going to accept this. Maybe he suits up in week one if the court says, "Look, we'll take a weekend to decide it." Like, he files for an injunction on Thursday or Friday, and the court says, "Look, we don't have enough time to look over this matter. You are eligible to play in the first game of the season while we examine the legal issues." Maybe that happens. The other thing is, if he's going to win at all and play for an extended period of time, he's going to have to get the court to accept that injunction. And there's some doubt out there among legal analysts, and I'm certainly not one of them, that a court will accept an injunction in this case when it's clear that the union and the NFL have an agreement that covers issues as it relates to personal conduct and suspensions.
You know, we're obviously we're a Giants show here, so we like to talk a little bit more about the Giants, and they obviously are in the NFC East. So, you know, the Giants coming off an 11-5 season, there's a lot of promise to this defense. You know, can they keep up what they did last year? One guy that has, in our minds, has just been an incredible player in Landon Collins. What do you like about Landon? I know he's, you know, this is going to be he's a young guy, but you know, last year he's up for Defensive Player of the Year, and just really has just risen up the ranks as far as a defensive player. What do you like about Landon Collins and this in this Spagnuolo defense?
Everything.
That's an easy question. Next question, please.
Right. I mean, look, what's there not to like about Landon Collins? I mean, he comes up and plays hard. He hits hard. He's a playmaker. You know, comes up with turnovers and intercepts. I mean, this guy is the next version of, you know, I guess the question for me on Landon Collins is, relative to guys like Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed, is he going to take a step into that kind of territory, or is he in the Roy Williams, John Lynch, Leroy Butler,
Sean Taylor, maybe?
Sean Taylor was Sean Taylor would have been every bit as good as Polamalu.
Sure.
And Reed, if he had lived. Okay, so Sean Taylor was truly special. He's probably bigger. He was bigger than Ed Reed,
right?
And a bigger hitter than Troy, even. So I don't think he's there. But I think that Landon, the question is, like, is he going to get there? Like, is that what we're looking at, or is he in that next group, which is excellent? Look, I mean, you're talking borderline Hall of Famers. You know, there's a ring of Hall of Famers that we're talking about. Yeah, because Ed Reed's going to get in, Troy Polamalu is going to get in, Sean Taylor would have gotten in, or are you in that next group where we're arguing about whether you get in or not? And I think that Landon Collins, you know, we're trying to figure out where he is in that one. I think it's probably closer to the ones that you argue about where he's going to be.
Sure.
But I've seen glimpses, you know, I've seen things that make me say, huh, that could be, you know, like a Troy or an Ed. I mean, I see moments like that.
We, you know, just going to stay on the defense real quickly, because you know, you look at JPP. This guy has had, you know, the last year has been very traumatic for him. He's come back from injury with the hand. Last year he goes out with the groin injury. We have seen him play in the offseason like he played 3 years ago when he was, you know, just leading this defense in sacks and things like that. If you look at the two defensive ends with Jason Pierre-Paul and Olivia Vernon, in your mind, anybody else that could match up to those two guys, and not only in the NFC East but in the National Football League, coming off the edges, do you see any other team having two guys like that?
Well, San Diego's actually pretty close. I mean, with Bosa and Ingram, so I would say that those guys. I'd have to think through everybody.
I know. Off the top of your mind,
Kansas City's pretty good when Justin Houston is healthy. Houston, I don't know how you classify J.J. Watt. So if you go J.J. Watt, and then you've got on the other side, you've got Clowney, and then there's Merciless in there too.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, but you're talking about in the top three or four of the league, okay? And so I'll start with that. And then you add in the depth. Like, this is perfectly suited for what Spags likes to do, I think. When they've won championships, it's been depth the defensive line.
Yeah.
Come at you in waves, keep bringing guys and bringing guys and bringing guys, and you know, eventually upset the quarterback. So defensively, I think that the you know, what they have put together looks like possibility of championship. The questions come on the other side of the ball, obviously, on what kind of overall offense you're going to have.
Well, and that's a good segue to my next question, as we're talking to Jason Cole, who covers the NFL for Bleacher Report. What we just laid out and what you alluded to, Jason, is the fact that it seems on paper they've got a number of attractive defensive pieces for Spags to toy with, and I think the numbers showed that last season. But the offense from 2015 to 2016 dipped by a touchdown. They averaged 7 less points last season, Jason, than they did in 2015. Now, they added a number of weapons, Evan Ingram in the draft, Brandon Marshall in the receiving core. You hope that this offensive line moves forward. How much pressure, though, do you think is on that defense that you mentioned that is perhaps a Super Bowl caliber defense to perhaps once again do a lot of the heavy lifting this season?
Well, you're going to have to do the heavy lifting because you're going to probably be playing a lot of high-scoring games because the nature of the Giants' offense is, you know, it's all built around throwing the ball, right? So you're going to be playing quick strike kind of offense. And so is Spags going to adjust by playing quick strike defense, right? So how do you marry your defensive philosophy with your offensive philosophy? Now, I'm sure that McAdoo's dream is that, okay, the running game at least gets to a point where it's respectable so that, okay, we can score some points early, force the other team into throwing the ball, take advantage of the pass rushers we have, get a turnover or two, get the scoring up that way, and then when you're in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, then you can run to win the game, okay? You're working the clock in the second half of games with your running game. But it's all predicated on, can you actually block anybody up front? And over the last year plus, okay, they haven't blocked anybody in the run game. And that's just the way it is right now until they fix that. And that's on top of the fact that they don't pass protect all that well either. But, you know, Eli's pretty good getting the ball out. So they've got some things they've got to do up front with that offensive line. I mean, Flowers in particular, there are moments where Flowers looks okay, and then there are moments where Flowers, you know, looks like it's not an ability thing. It looks like a focus kind of thing where, you know, he runs 10 plays and one out of those 10 looks like it seems like there's a, kind of some kind of mental lapse for him, and you just can't have that.
You always wonder, you know, Ben McAdoo being an offensive coach, if all of a sudden he has to now revert to his thinking as being more of a defensive coach because of what you just said, Jason, and trying to, you know, really go into a game thinking about from a defensive standpoint how we're going to game plan this game coming in, because, you know, this offense scoring only 19 points last year on the defense, roughly giving up 17 a game. I'm just kind of guessing what it was. I don't know exactly, but in that philosophy, that could work, but the one missing component here is exactly what you said, and I cannot tell you how many calls we've taken on this show about Eric Flowers and the offensive line, but we all know in football, if you're going to get into the fourth quarter with a lead, you got to be able to run the football. That offensive line, you know, they tried to improve a little bit in the offseason with the guys that they have, and what I mean by that is they went to schools, and they worked hard in the offseason, but, you know, they get DJ Fluker. We got a guy here named Brett Jones. I don't think he's an lineman. Brett Jones is kind of pushing for that right guard position. So, and there was a little bit of symmetry that went into the preseason game against the Jets. They did rush the ball well and stuff like that. So I agree with you on this offensive line. It's definitely suspect. They got to play better, get into that fourth quarter and win some games. And this team certainly has to be a lot better in the red zone. They just have not been able to score points down there. But, you know, defensively, I think that this team will keep them in the games. And I think offensively, they just going to have to, you know, slide by the seat of their pants and hopefully get in the end zone more than the other team.
Well, I think that's a great capture of what you're looking at. I think the hardest thing to do for a head coach, and I've seen it one time that really popped out at me, which was, and I think it was the 09 season when New Orleans won their Super Bowl over Indianapolis, if I'm remembering correctly that it was 09. So that year, Sean Payton decides, okay, we got this incredibly fast-paced attack. We can throw the ball all over the field. We've been able to generate yards. I'm going to go get Greg Williams as the defensive coordinator. Now, let's forget about the history of what happened with Greg Williams and Sean Payton afterwards with, you know, Bounty Gate and all that kind of stuff. But for that one season, you know, when they put it together, Sean Payton made this conscious decision of, look, I'm going to play games that are 35-30. If it's 42-38, okay, I'm going to play games like that. I'm not worried about the yards or points that we give up on defense. I'm worried about, do we get a couple of turnovers? Do we force action here? Do we get something that gives us the ball an extra one or two times a game? Are we going to win the turnover battle? And you watched it all season long with New Orleans. They gave up a lot of points, but they got a lot of turnovers because they blitzed a lot, they attacked a lot, they gambled a lot, and they said, we're going to play fast-paced on both sides. I also covered Don Shula for you know, years and years and years at the end of his career. And as much as he had Dan Marino, who was fully capable of doing everything that Drew Brees did at playing at pace, and they would have, you know, 1 2-minute possession after another, whether they scored or gave up the ball, it was just too difficult for Shula to say, okay, we're going to play fast pace on offense. They just, it's too hard for even some of the great coaches to make that leap and take that kind of chance how they want to play with the defense. I think it's going to be fascinating to see what McAdoo does this year.
Fascinating. I love that word. I think a lot of people will see it fascinating, too. I agree with you there.
And speaking of turnovers, I mean, that's an area that the Giants would like to see increase, even though that defense was opportunistic. And that brings me to another team in the division. And I think it's interesting, Jason, that you brought up turnover differential and takeaways, because if you look at the Dallas Cowboys, you know, their philosophy going back to 2014 has been, we're going to milk the clock, we're going to keep the defense off the field, and we're going to have the offense do the heavy lifting because we're a little worried about the state of the defense. Now, with maybe Elliott out of the picture, defensive turnover in terms of the roster, you know, they're hoping that they can continue to follow the principle of running the football and milk the clock, but, you know, there's some changes to the offensive line and obviously some question marks on defense. You know, what do you make of what's happened for the Cowboys this offseason, and that idea that this offensive line is so strong, does that still exist to you? Is that a fair narrative, even though they moving some pieces around?
Look, they start. Here's four of their guys on their offensive line that we know, right? Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, Lyle Collins. I could line up Fiegels as the number five guy. I think I'd be okay on offensive line, right?
That'd be something. Yeah, I'd pay to watch
that. Is the recorder on?
You're not going along with that. I know that. You ain't lining up anywhere on an offensive line anytime soon, not voluntarily, okay? So we'd have to force you and do this. This would be conscription, basically. But, look, they got four big horses there, and they'll be fine on their offensive line. And they're going to run the ball just fine. Even if it's not Zeke, McFadden, for at least short periods of time, 5-6 games, he's rarely done it over 16 games because he gets hurt a lot.
Yeah.
But he's done it. Now, Alfred Morris has done it, you know, over a full season. Now we're talking about only having to help out as the backup. I think they're going to run the ball very effectively. I think their offense is going to be terrific. I think they're going to score a ton of points. I also think that they're going to play defense like a slot machine and give up a lot of points, too, because their secondary is, you know, transition is a polite word. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So, and they don't have anybody who can rush the passer on a consistent basis. They don't have anybody, like, you know, could you imagine what they would pay for a pass rusher right now if they could? So,
yeah.
And, you know, David Irving, you know, one of the better young prospects along the defensive line, is down for, was it four games, I think?
Four games suspension, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, like, everybody talks about Zeke and what that's going to do to the team. I thought they had problems whether they had Zeke or not.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, they were going to struggle early in the season anyways. I just think that for them, if they can get out of the first games at 6-6, you know, the first six games at 6-6, assuming Zeke is suspended for that, I think they're okay, because I think they can still get to 9-10 victories. And again, in a balanced division, they'll have a chance, especially if the Giants are not on top of their game all season long. They're going to open the door for the Cowboys. But I don't see the Cowboys rolling to 12 or 13 victories this year, not like last year.
Sure. Sure. So we'll switch down to the Eagles. Let's talk a little bit about them, their quarterback position, and Carson Wentz, who I thought did a pretty good job coming in, playing every game as a rookie. You never can substitute experience. That's going to be really good for him. You know, Doug Peterson being the coach, being a quarterback guy. What do you see out of the Eagles offense and as a team collectively that these guys can do better than they did last year?
Well, I think they're going to improve. I mean, this is now, how much do they improve? I think LeGarrette Blount is a nice hammer to have, but I don't think he's going to repeat that. He had an outlier season last year with a great offensive team. So he was set up to get some of the yards and the touchdowns that he got last year. So for people in Philadelphia to expect that Blount is going to come in and do that, no, that's not it. But they're going to be able to throw the ball around a whole lot better than they did last year. I think that Alshon Jeffrey helps them a lot, gives them a big target as long as he can stay healthy. They've got the little running backs, both of them. I don't know that they're going to keep both of them, but I assume that they'll have both Sproles and the Pumphrey kid. So they're going to be able to throw the ball around a lot better than they did last year. The two tight ends are both fine. So I'm not worried, again, not worried so much about them offensively. I don't think they're in a class with the other three teams quite. They're the fourth best offense, but they're a fourth best offense with an upward trend because of the quarterback and the weapons. The question is on defense. I mean, look, they're going to be one of the many teams that's in on Joe Hayden if Hayden hasn't signed in the last 15 minutes, which I don't think it's happened. But Hayden, you know, they'll be in on Hayden like so many other teams will be in on Hayden. Because on the outside, they just don't – they're not covering people. I mean, Darby helps, but Darby is – you know, that was like, hey, look, give us something. We need something on the outside to cover people so that we can hopefully make the most out of Fletcher Cox and, you know, and the Barnett kid up front and have some kind of pass rush. I think that, you know, we're going to see a lot of Jim Schwartz coming up with all sorts of different ideas to create pressure and to create any kind of semblance of a consistent defense. Because I think when you're weak on the outside, it's just like we talked about with the Cowboys. It's really tough to play consistent defense when you don't cover well.
Talking with Jason Cole, who covers the NFL for Bleacher Report, and when you look at the Redskins, you know, they have plenty of talent around Kirk Cousins, even though they did lose DeSean Jackson in the offseason, brought in Terrell Pryor and company. But the defense, I think, would be also, like the Eagles, Jason, where some of the question marks are. What's your biggest concern about Washington's defense?
I think they're going to be a little bit better than they were a year ago. I don't think they're going to be the same because I think some of the guys that were drafted the last few years are going to improve a little bit. They're just, again, we come back to how consistent is your pass rush? You know, can you make something happen? Do you have guys who can stir the drink? Now, they've got better cover guys, I think. You know, you start with Josh Norman in their secondary. You know, he's probably the best overall corner in the division. I know Janoris Jenkins would probably be angry with me saying that, but I do think that Norman's a better player than him. So I think that they start off from a strong, you know, position, or at least a relatively strong one. But they've got some other issues along their defense in terms of creating pressure, and they're one of these teams, just like the Cowboys, and to a certain extent, just like the Giants, that you got to score to get on top of people, and you have to change basically the rhythm of how your opponent is going to play. Like, and I always remember this quote from Jimmy Johnson, and he's, because you know, they were great when the Cowboys were really rolling in the early 90s under Jimmy. Jimmy said, yeah, you, I said, Jimmy, what was the key when you were, you know, you're getting up 7-10-0 on people? You know, how does that change everything? He goes, well, let me just put it to you this way. You know, that opponent gets down 10-0 because people are greedy and coaches are people. So all of a sudden you get that whole thing where the coach on the other side gets down 10-0 and they're like, we got to get 7 back right now. We got to get back in a hurry. We can't get down. We can't give them the ball again. And, you know, and then we're going to be down 17-0, and you lose trust in your defense and all those things that we talk about. So it's a mind game as much as it is a physical game on the field.
Jason, before we let you go, I know off the top you mentioned that you see perhaps one team in this division winning 11 games. As we take a look at what to expect in the 2017 season, I'm curious, who do you think is going to be that 11-win team, and who do you think is ultimately going to win this division?
Well, it's the Giants. Look, and I'm not doing that because I don't need anybody from New York to send me messages. I just think the Giants they have the best defense, and they have a passing game with their depth at wide receiver between, you know, Odell, you know, I know guys are banged up, Marshall, Shepard, and Ingram. I know that all those guys have been hurt, you know, at least the receivers have been hurt one way or another since the start of camp. But I still think that they're going to be fine once the season starts. And that's going to be an explosive offense. And then you marry that with a defense that has pass rushers and has a secondary that can really play. To me, that's the best recipe of all four of those teams. But they are not so sturdy because they can't run the ball consistently, or at least they can't yet, where they're not susceptible to teams, you know, making runs at them in the second half.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, Jason, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for coming on and previewing the NFC East. Look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you, Jason.
No problem. Take care, guys.
You got it. Jason Cole covers the NFL for Bleacher Report, kind enough to chime in on the conversation. And, you know, as he mentioned, Jeff, you can tell there's a lot of question marks across the board. These teams are close, but at the same time, a lot of question marks.
Well, I think when you break it down, I think it comes down in this division, it comes down to the defense. All defenses. And you look at the Giants, you look at their defense, we've said enough about them. We know what they can do. I think the Philly and Dallas and Redskin defense, all a little suspect. I mean, those teams all have some offense, but, you know, where are they going to go when their offense goes south? Is their defense going to be able to step up and win a game for them? You put those four teams on paper and you say, which one in that theory is going to take you there? It's going to be the Giants. And so the Giants will win some games defensively that those other teams will not be able to do it, which is, in my opinion, is going to put them over the top. I don't know. 11 games again, that's getting it done. I think the top two teams in the division here are going to be – there may be an 11 guy. I like the 10 number. I like the 10 and then the 9 and the 8 maybe. Or maybe the 8 and 7. They're like 10, 9, 8, 7 or somewhere on there. And maybe, you know, that 11. The interesting thing about, you know, with Jason saying that one of those teams are going to come out of the NFC East, you look at who the NFC East is playing this year. And of those two divisions you mentioned, he had two of those teams coming out of there. There could be a little bit of a swappage going on there where one of those other teams doesn't make it in the West or the South.
And that opens the door
for the NFC East teams.
Yeah.
So, interesting. I'll talk till we start playing again. But speaking of playing, we got a game tomorrow.
We do indeed. And we're going to have, by the way, Art Stapleton of The Record on here in a second. He'll give his take on what to expect in that preseason game. But before we have Art on, you know, let's discuss a little bit about what to expect in this game tonight. You're not going to see a lot out of the starters. Ben McAdoo indicated that. Maybe they'll do a little bit about what they did last season. But for the most part, you're going to see a lot of opportunities for the back end of the roster to really make it an interesting competition here down the stretch.
Well, one thing about tonight is that this is – and I think that the Giants are going to go with what they did last year and as far as who plays in the game. You're not going to see a lot of the starters. But most importantly about the fourth preseason game is a couple things. Number one, you rest your guys, your starters, okay? You play the guys who are on the bubble. You're going to get one last chance for them to prove themselves. Because I don't think the evaluation process, it's always ongoing. I think going into the fourth game of the preseason, the roster's pretty much shaping itself up. Somebody's going to have to do something in this game to really open somebody's eyes, to cut a player that they didn't think that it was going to be on the team or not. So that's the other thing. The other thing is your back-end roster players have to play the game. Now, listen, it's a lot easier because there's 90 guys
correct.
Playing
they didn't
here,
cut
where
it down.
Typically there was only 75. And you really think, well, what's 15 players? It does make a difference. Health. Some of those guys that are your bubble players that you're wanting to be on the team, and they make the team, you want to make sure that they're healthy because you need them. And then you look at the matchups that are going on. Not matchups, it's the competition. That wide receiver position, the kicking position, the backup quarterback position, which I'm tired of talking about backup quarterback position to Eli Manning. The backup quarterback position never plays, but we spend so much time on it. Who's it going to be? But look at those three things. Tonight and really come out of the game healthy, come out of the game with some questions that you had answered, and it's going to be a tough weekend. Not really a weekend because this is the time of the year when it's a final cutdown and guys' dreams die on Saturday at 4 o'clock. Unfortunately, you can only have 53 guys in the team, but do know this, that there's a lot of stuff going on between Saturday and leading up to the game next week. Building that roster, you got your 53 man, but not only that, you got your practice squad guy. So
yeah,
there'll be guys in this building next week that we don't even know their names right now. We don't even know where they're from. It'll be a little bit of a different roster coming in next week.
Well, and like you said, there's going to be so many players that are going to be released simultaneously, Jeff. That's the other thing to take into consideration here.
Well, let's look at that both ways. There's going to be players on this team that are released that are going to get picked up immediately on other teams. hence that defensive line, okay?
Yeah.
So, and unfortunately, you can't hide players anymore in this league. You can't do it. You know, you go and try to hide a player on practice squad. The other team goes and picks them up and puts them on the active roster, which is the rule. But on the flip side of it, yes, as an organization, you always hear it, is we're trying to improve our roster continuously. Now, will there be guys out there that the Giants have some interest in? Of course. And this is the time of the year where all the scouts are doing their due diligence on every one of these players that are in the league right now, and they have their short list of every team's roster. And if this guy gets released, this is one of our hot list guys we would like to know. If he doesn't, yeah, check that team off. But there will be some transactions. Lo and behold, that happens every time.
And we've seen it also with the Giants, Jeff. We've seen them sometimes. They'll add a free agent here, especially if it's an established veteran.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You look at Leon Hall.
Leon Hall, who was added a little bit earlier,
yeah,
but still.
I mean, it was
later in the
offseason.
Yeah.
But that all predicates itself on injuries. It predicates itself on depth. And it also predicates itself on the roster. The roster is at 53, and we're going to go over the roster one of these days. But are they going to carry 9 defensive linemen? Are they going to carry seven linemen?
Yeah.
It's a numbers game. You know, where can they afford to keep one guy? And I think one right off the top of my head, is it going to be a fullback or is it not going to be a fullback? You know, that's one position. Right now it's looking like it's going to be a fullback because Smith has played very well. And I think that there's an opportunity for him to be on this team because he plays special teams and that they can insert him in on certain positions.
Because if you're going to play that position, I mean, it goes back to last season, Jeff. They felt that there was only about 5 or 6 plays that the fullback was going to be on the field. So clearly if you're going to keep somebody like that, they better contribute on special teams. And all you have to do is go back to a guy like Nikita Whitlock. The benefit for him, though, he played offense and defense.
And
special teams, too, correct. But the fact that they could at least use him in a variety of spots makes it a little bit easier to make sure that he's on the roster.
It justifies the roster position. Now, if you're a fullback and you only play fullback and you only played one on maybe on the punt team, that's all you could do, well, you're not going to be on this team. You're going to play main 4 special teams units, probably 7, 8, 9, 10 plays a game at fullback, and, you know, that's about it. So, you know, I think he's going to make the team, and I think he's going to take a position away from one of those tight ends.
Well, how the versatility of the roster plays out is going to be a huge storyline moving forward.
And we're going to have Art here on. It's a good question for Art, and we'll get his answers a little bit on the roster coming up.
Absolutely. With that being said, perfect segue.
Oh,
Jeff,
how about that?
We do have Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record, on the line, kind enough to give us a few minutes here on Big Blue Kickoff Live as we are previewing the Giants-Patriots preseason finale. Art, Lance, and Jeff here. How's everything?
Hey guys, I'm doing all right. I'm probable for the game, but I know there are a lot of Giants regulars who will not be playing, but they'll be in attendance. So we're ready to go. Let's get this wild weekend in the NFL over with so we can start focusing in on September 10th. How about that?
Yeah,
absolutely. And it will be a wild weekend for every team indeed because they're going to be making so many roster changes given the fact that there's no longer a 75-man cut. So the Giants have a lot of question marks. They have a lot of position battles, Art. From a generic standpoint, what are you looking at as they enter this final preseason game? What do you think the key position battles are in this final contest?
Key.
You know what? The crazy thing is I don't know if we're going to get the answers to really what I think is the most important spot, and that's probably cornerback. And just beyond the top three, we know, you know, Jackrabbit and Eli Apple and DRC are the top three, and I believe Dante Dion has made this team as well. I would think they would like to keep 6 corners, at least I would. You know, Michael Hunter is a question mark because of the concussion protocol. I mean, we don't know how this concussion protocol will progress day to day. The coaches admit they don't know. So can you really count on Hunter being on the field? I mean, he earned that number 4 spot, but will he be there in week 1? So if you're talking about that, you're one injury away on opening night of having to try to, you know, who is going to cover the Cowboys if they go out and start to throw the ball around. So that is kind of the underlying concern for me. But really the debate is going to be fullback, tight end, And do you keep a fullback? Do you keep four tight ends? And where does that go? So for the game purposes, I think you're looking at Shane Smith versus Matt Lacoste versus maybe even a Will Tye to win that spot, to convince the Giants. You know, Shane Smith has to convince the Giants that they need to keep a fullback, because Ben McAdoo may just look at the tight ends and say, you know what, we'd rather have that flexibility at tight end. So I think those are really the two spots that I'm looking at going into the weekend.
All right, okay, so let's just backtrack a little bit. So I agree. It's actually a little bit scary when you talk about the cornerback position, because, you know, if Michael Hunter is on the roster but for some reason can't play, and you have Dante Dion, who all of a sudden one injury away, and I just cannot see Dante Dion being on the outside covering,
Dez Bryant.
Right. So it's a quandary here, and I'm looking at the depth chart. So we've got, you know, Nigel Tribune. All right, okay. Eric Pinkins is a guy that can play special teams. He's a veteran in this league. But, you know, really when I start, this is scary. And which leads me to believe, I know they brought a cornerback in the other day. I don't know his name. You may know his name. But there's a good possibility that the Giants go out and get somebody that's cut. And he's not here yet. Do you agree?
Yes, no doubt. And I think, you know, Jeff, that the Dion being on the outside, I don't know necessarily if that would happen, because I think that in the case of if Jack Rabbit or Eli Apple were to get injured in the game, I think they'd bump DRC outside and put Dion in the slot.
Okay.
So completely understand what you're saying, but I don't know. They'd have to be two down in order for Dion to be out there staring at Dez Bryant on the outside. you know, but he'd be up for the challenge, I tell you that much.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I do think, and you guys mentioned it, the idea of going from 90 to 53. Right, if teams start getting a jump on cuts on Friday, and you have to set your 53 on Saturday at 4 o'clock, the waiver claims from Friday to Saturday, unless there's a rule, you know, it's been ambiguous from the league, because they haven't really let everyone know the idea that when are the deadlines for the waiver claims. Because normally it's a 24-hour waiver claim. So a guy gets cut on Friday, he would have to clear waivers or be claimed by Saturday at 4 o'clock.
Well, you got to have I see what you're going, yeah.
Under these circumstances, you know, you're at the point now where if you're the Giants, you're looking at a corner that gets cut on Friday, you now have to factor him in on your 53 for Saturday, and now where do you go? You know, I think they do have a spot with Oladigizua being waived. So that's kind of that empty spot. They're right at 89 now. So maybe that was kind of the waiver claim spot that they're looking at on Friday and say, you know what, it gives us the flexibility. We don't have to worry about, you know, who do we leave off of our current 53, and we could just claim someone there. But absolutely, if there's a corner out there, this is going to put a lot of pressure on the pro personnel department of every team in the league, and especially the Giants. And they've actually done very well over the last couple of years in pro personnel. And I think, again, all the scouting that's been done in the preseason and really going back to college tapes and that kind of thing, this week, boy, it is going to be some sort of challenge in order to be able to make your team better, but also being able to pick the right guy under pressure, because it will be a lot of pressure this weekend logistically.
Talking with Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record. And Art, I think you brought up a great point. It really is a crash course also in mathematics for the pro personnel people, because like you said, if they got to keep a roster spot open so they have the flexibility that they can claim somebody, and having to factor that into the final 53. And you brought up Double O, who was just waived after they announced that he was going to be suspended for the first four games. And I think the defensive line is probably an area maybe opposite of the cornerback spot where they have a number of options. And it's going to be difficult to determine, are they going to keep 9? Are they going to keep 10? Do they like the versatility from the defensive ends that can move inside, so maybe they don't have to keep as many defensive tackles? How do you see the defensive line playing out, and who perhaps is on the bubble as we enter this final preseason game?
You know, I don't know about a bubble, but I do know that Jay Bromley's knee injury complicates things. You know, he's in a bulky knee brace earlier this week. I mean, he says no significant damage to the knee, but if week one is in question, and, you know, who knows how quickly he'll be able to come back from that knee, you know, you can't, you have to have him on the 53. You can't, I know it's been floated out there, the idea of, well, maybe if Bromley is a 3 to 4 week injury, maybe you put him on IR and then you could have designation to return. Well, we remember last year the Will Johnson scenario where everyone thought, present company excluded, that when he wasn't on the 53, the Giants put him on IR, that he was a return candidate. Well, the rule is you have to be on the initial 53 in order to be a return candidate for the injured reserve. So Bromley's injury, I think, complicates things. You know, Rob Thomas got off to a great start at the beginning of camp. You know, I thought he would end up being the starter at that moment, first week and a half. But he's kind of slowed a little bit. So I look at that spot and say, if they're going to cheat at defensive tackle, you know, do they keep Bromley, Tomlinson, and Snacks and then let Thomas go? I don't know if they're willing to do that. But I think if you want to keep an extra defensive end in that situation, or Jordan Williams, who is really a bubble guy, but he's shown the versatility to be able to come inside in the pass rush and sub packages, and we all know how Spags loves to use his ends on the interior. Do you cheat there? Do you look and say, we're only going to keep three defensive tackles, but we like Williams and we want to keep Kerry Wynn and Aquara and, you know, a Devin Taylor? You know, maybe you keep an extra end, knowing full well that in sub packages, you know, OV is going to move inside and JPP is going to move inside. So that's spot right there, the Bromley injury, I think, complicates things, because I think under normal circumstances, you know, you keep Bromley, Tomlinson, and Snacks, and there are only three DTs on the roster. I don't know if you can do that going into week one, especially against a presumably run-heavy Dallas offense.
Well, all right, we're going to go to the offense. Enough time on the defense. All right. Take a breath, Art. Take a breath. We're going to the offense. Okay, let's go to special teams. Which
Pitcher,
we will. Listen. All right, I'll tell you what. Well, that's a tease.
You want to go there?
Let's go there. All right, let's go there. You've been out to practice many times more than I have. Okay, but I don't need to go out to practice anymore to see the leg of Aldrick Rosas and what he can do, you know, this year. I have him making the team. I think it would be amazing if he didn't. I think the upside to this kid, you've seen him kick. Obviously, we're not going to know about experience until he gets it. What's your take on the kicking position? And I'll just leave it at that.
Don't let this be Brandon McManus 2.0.
There you go.
Don't let it be. You know, you brought Mike Nugent in here. He's done everything you possibly could want him to do as a veteran. He's put pressure on Aldrick Rosas. The kid hasn't flinched. He's done everything you've asked. You like his potential. He's the kind of guy that, you know, look, I don't want to go 10 years down the road in this league. You barely can go 2 years down the road. But Rosas, look, you do what you did with Brad Wing. You get a young guy to play that position, and all of a sudden, you know, Wing is your punter of the future, and, you know, however long he's going to be there. I think unless Rosas comes out against the Patriots and shanks three kicks and all of a sudden you're worried about his confidence, there's nothing that I've seen to doubt his confidence. I'm taking Rosas over Nugent, and I think Mike Nugent, for what the Giants have given him in the preseason, I think he's probably earned a job somewhere else this season that he may not have gotten off of last season if he didn't have the kind of preseason he did with the Giants.
Totally agree.
I agree with that, too. Now, Art, for the means of comparison, I'm not trying to say they're the same leg strength, but, you know, we were in a situation last offseason where we had a young kicker here with the Giants, Tom Obarski. Now, they were preparing for the Josh Brown suspension, and he wound up not delivering with that field goal opportunity he got. But the reason I bring that up, Art, is because fans, and I'm sure you're hearing from them, they love to go to track record of the organization. And you brought up, don't let it become Brandon McManus 2.0. But for the most part, going back to Tom Coughlin, even a little bit with Ben McAdoo, the Giants have tended to lean towards the veteran over giving the younger guy a chance. How much does that philosophy perhaps equate to what we're looking at right now with this kicking competition?
I think this is a new regime with Ben McAdoo. I don't believe Ben McAdoo, if the coaches are making the decision, I don't believe Ben McAdoo will go to the veteran. I actually think it's the opposite. I think Ben McAdoo will go to the young guy. You know, and let's not forget, James Jones is not on this roster a couple of years
ago.
Good point. And they said goodbye to him. They wanted to keep their young receivers. You know, last year it was a surprise. It wouldn't surprise me that if given the choice last year, if they had other options or maybe more confidence in Roger Lewis or Tavarus King, that I don't know if the coaches would have kept Victor Cruz around. I think they may have gone away from Victor, but they, you know, they as an organization, they felt as though Victor deserved one more year. But Ben McAdoo will go to the young player. Now, if, you know, they have a lot of respect for Tom Quinn, for all the heat that Tom Quinn has taken from fans through the years. The Giants have stuck by him, and they have a lot of respect for him as special teams coordinator. If he walks in the room and says, my guy is Nugent, well, then I'd say, you know what? Okay, maybe we got to listen and hear Tom out. But I thought all along it would be Rosas' job unless he fell apart. And the Obarski thing last year, that was his first field goal chance he had up in Buffalo, and he missed it. I think that's where the nerves came from. If somehow Rosas missed a kick against the Patriots, I don't know necessarily if the Giants are going to look at it and go, well, that wipes the slate. He's kicked in games so far in the preseason. But, look, it's a different story on opening night. I mean, Giants won on opening night last year by missing an extra – they missed an extra point. Bullock missed an extra point. His presence was a disaster for them, and yet they still won the game. So, and then he was gone in week two. So it's just things you can never predict. You can't predict what the kicker is going to do.
Tonight's game, what are you looking at offensively? It's hard. I know it's a tough question because you don't have the starters in there and it's the fourth preseason game, Art. But give me a little bit about what you might be thinking, the running game, you know, the backup quarterback position, if we have to go there.
I think Geno Smith has got to play a smart game. No turnovers. If you turn the ball over, Geno, you're probably not going to win the backup job. If you don't turn the ball over, I would give you the backup job. That's how I look at that competition. I think at this point, it doesn't really matter what Josh Johnson does. I think it's really about Geno and whether or not the Giants feel like they can trust him to not make mistakes. The offensive line, you know, look, I don't expect Weston Richburg to play, so I expect a lot of Brett Jones at center. So I'm not going to make overriding judgments on the offensive line in the first team. And will Brett Jones get more time at right guard instead of John Jerry and all that stuff? I don't think you can make that determination until we see them in week one and what Ben McAdoo is going to do. So I'm not going to go crazy over, you know, if somehow the offensive line is out there and it's, you know, and Flowers and Hart are out there with Jerry and Brett Jones and then someone else at left guard, I'm not going to all of a sudden say, well, see, they went back to John Jerry. I really think the Giants are focused in on Dallas. They know what they have to get through tonight, and I don't think they're going to reveal any you know, depth chart plans. And then the last thing would probably be injuries. You know, I said to somebody yesterday the idea that we were up at Foxborough a couple of years ago, and Andre Brown was slotted to be, if not the starter, the 1B to the offense, and you know, that second running back. And he returned a kick late in the second quarter and broke his leg.
Yeah.
And it changed everything in the backfield. Darrell Scott, who was going to get cut, ended up making the team. He ended up making a gaffe in Dallas that really cost him. I think it was a pick six on a swing route.
It was, yeah.
If I don't forget. So a lot of things can happen to those, not the bottom guys, but the guys who are kind of, you know, you would look at them and say, all right, they're on this roster. You know, I would not play Evan Engram tonight. I wouldn't. I think Ben McAdoo will, but I wouldn't risk it. I wouldn't risk that kind of thing with Engram and Ellison. Any guy that I expect to have a big impact on this team, I would not play because me personally, I know you don't play football that way, but I would fear injury tonight in that game.
And really, it's hard. It's hard because, you know, you're put up against that. Hey, listen, we got to play the game. So, you know, and we don't want to put our Pop Warner team that we've had stuck over here in Meadowlands, you know. So It is. It's a tough situation. I mentioned a little earlier before you came on, Art, is that, you know, coming out of a fourth preseason game, the number one thing you want to do is come out of it healthy. And you got to play some guys like your young guys that are going to be on the team, but you can't do anything about it. You just kind of, one, you come out of the game healthy, and number two, you know, at this point, I got to believe that the roster is 98% solidified who's going to make it. And is there going to be one of those guys that turns somebody's, you know, does a great job tonight, and you go into the staff meeting tomorrow when you're getting ready to make the picks and say, hey, you know what, I don't know, that guy did really well last night, but who was he playing against, you know? So
Right. The guy I think right now that I think fans will be upset if they lose this weekend, because if they put him to waivers, there's no way he's not getting claimed, is Travis Rudolph, in my mind. That's the one guy this weekend that, you know, because of what he did against the Jets, heck, the Jets are probably sitting there going, please, let the Giants waive Travis Rudolph so we can claim him, looking at the state of their wide receiver situation. So that is something to watch this weekend. It's not just the guys you're battling on your own roster, but it's also battling the waiver spots.
Yeah.
You know, are you valuable enough to convince your front office, you know what, we don't want to take a chance on that other guy who didn't make it elsewhere. We got to stick with our guy. So can Travis Rudolph put the squeeze on Tavares King this weekend? You know, it's been a long time since Tavares has been out there on the field. I think that's kind of the interesting battle that the Giants have inside the front office, is that how do you make those decisions and not look back with regret?
Well, look, because if you take Travis Rudolph and you're gonna put him out there, he's gonna get picked up. You put Tavares King and Roger Lewis Jr. out on waivers, they're not getting picked up. So I think you're sitting there going, okay, we got to protect our upside here. And make this, and Travis Rudolph can play special teams. Okay, he's dedicated himself to do that. His coach told him when he came from Florida State, go play special teams, and then you'll play receiver next.
Because he didn't do that in college.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think that he has been a pleasant surprise. I don't know if it's so much a surprise. I think a lot of people thought he would do well. But yeah, you're right. You're battling the waiver wire, and you're battling your own roster from an organizational standpoint, which is very difficult at times when you have to go and make cuts. And, you know, those cuts on that defensive line, it's going to be tough. Someone's gonna be on another team on Saturday off that defensive line when they get cut.
Yeah, no doubt. And I said to Jordan Williams the other day when I talked to him, you know, how do you approach it? And he said the biggest lesson that I've learned from last year to this year, because he was down in Miami last year and he ended up getting cut and made the practice squad. And he said the biggest lesson I learned is, the guys who go out in week four in the preseason and try to make an impact are the guys that end up getting cut. He said, because those are the guys who are going to make the mistake that, hey, I'm going to go get that sack. And then you overrun the play and you give up a big gain. And all of a sudden your coach looks at you on the sideline and goes, that wasn't your assignment. That wasn't what you were supposed to do. You know, turn your playbook in on Saturday. It's the pressure. If the guys let the pressure get to them about making this team, that's kind of when you see who you need and who you can count on and who you want to, you know, part ways with and say, good luck next stop. And, you know, hopefully we'll see you soon.
Yeah. Focusing so much on making that one notable play to stand out in the final preseason game. And, you know, you brought up the wide receivers, Art, and that relates exactly to your point earlier when we were talking to you about Jay Bromley's injury, how that impacts the defensive tackles, and Michael Hunter's concussion, how that impacts the mindset of the corners. Because you mentioned Tavares King hasn't been on the field for quite some time. You know, Roger Lewis has had reps. Travis Rudolph has had reps. But I guess from the Giants' perspective, how much does the health of the receiving core, Art, then factor into who they ultimately keep and who they choose to let go, especially when you take into consideration Odell Beckham's not 100%. I know Brandon Marshall was limited at practice, but, you know, he's still dealing with the shoulder injury. There's still a lot of question marks with just a little bit over a week to go before they suit up for the Cowboys.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if you're looking at it, you know, from an Odell perspective, and you say, well, if Odell can't play, I mean, none of the guys that you're keeping are going to replace Odell. We know that. I mean, I know that's not what you're saying either, Lance, but the reality is, you know, the body of work that Tavares King played, put up last year, you know, now if you're looking at some question marks at week one, you know, do you really want to let Tavares King go? I mean, you know, the guy was your leading receiver in the playoff game in Green Bay. I mean, so it's tough. It really is. I mean, I think from the receiving aspect of it too, it's what you're going to put on the field on offense, but Jeff hit it. And, of course, Mr. Special Teams would hit it. It is special teams. And Roger Lewis is a gunner on this team, and he's actually done pretty well as a gunner. You know, Travis Rudolph has contributed on special teams on this team. Tavares King, as much as they've tried to work him in, he hasn't been healthy this summer. So, you know, you're not looking at it going, well, TK is going to be the second returner on kickoff so he can contribute. I think those are questions that I'm sure the Giants are having this week. The idea of if we keep them all, where do we lose another guy? You know, do you short yourself at linebacker because now all of a sudden, well, in a pinch, we've tried Romeo Okwara a little bit at linebacker in practice, so we think he might be able to do it in a pinch in an emergency at the end of a game. I mean, those are questions that have to be answered, and let's not forget, this isn't a team that expects to go six wins, seven wins. This is a team that expects to compete for a division in the Super Bowl. So every week is important. So that these decisions are very, very calculated from a Giants perspective.
Well, and that's your point about versatility, which I think it definitely influences roster decisions. We're talking to Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record. Art, last one for me on the topic of versatility, and you hinted at this earlier, too, about the tight end spot, where they may have to choose between a Matt Lacoste and a Shane Smith, depending on what type of roles they could play on the roster. But from a big-picture perspective, the fact that we're now looking at a roster where Will Tye is on the bubble and even fighting to make this roster, and last year he was a starter. How far has this team come in terms of where the tight end depth chart looks like compared to what we were talking about at this point last season?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's night and day. I mean, you spent $18 million over a four-year contract for Red Ellison in free agency with a specific role in mind to fill a specific need. And then you draft Evan Engram with the first-round pick. I mean, it's night and day. Those two guys need to make a huge impact in this offense. You know, we talk about Marshall and we talk about the offensive line. Ellison and Engram are being counted on to factor into the improvements on the offense as much as anybody else on this offense. I mean, it's pretty cut and dried. I mean, if you don't get the contributions that you expect from Ellison and Engram this year, you're going to miss out on you know, more than 1% gains that McAdoo wants. I mean, they're aiming for a lot more. So, you know, look, it's tough. I mean, it was kind of ominous the other day, and maybe Ben McAdoo misspoke, but when he was talking about Will Tye, paraphrasing it, but he called him a tease on special teams. You know, the idea that, you know, and the way I took it was, you know, you got this great body and a physical guy, and, you know, Tye looks like he looks the part, and he just hasn't necessarily come through on special teams to kind of be that beast. Maybe it's lack of experience on special teams. Maybe it's not there. But, you know, if you can get Will Tye to be a factor on special teams, then you look at him and say, you know what, we like his receiving skills, but he's really a factor on special teams, and that's going to push him up the depth chart. I don't know if the Giants have seen that from Tye enough to say they've got to keep him as a fourth or a fifth tight end this weekend. So, yeah, absolutely. It's a complete 180 at the position. They're in safety. Well, remember a couple years ago when safety was the weak spot?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, listen, I think that, and this will be the last one for me, it's going to be kind of a fire round for you, Art, so get ready. Ben McAdoo wants a tight end that can catch the football, block. He wants the whole package. Look at that Green Bay offense, what they do with those tight ends. Here it is. Art, yes or no? Tight end position includes a fullback this season.
Yes.
I agree with you. All right.
I'm keeping Shane Smith.
And so, therefore, that's Matt. That's going to be Tye, and Lacoste are going to be gone, pretty much.
I think so. I want Lacoste back on practice squad.
Sure. All right, so I'm going to switch real quick. So the receiver position. You like this fire round here?
I like it.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Receiving position.
I don't know if Art loves it, but we'll see.
I know this is a long shot, but I know he hasn't been on the field, and I think that I've seen Sterling Shepard back there. I've seen Dante Dion back there. I've seen Travis Rudolph back there. Where I'm going with this is it because that Dwayne Harris has not been on the field that they're trying – that the Giants are trying to find somebody that they can be a return man and that Dwayne Harris is not on this team this year?
I thought there was a possibility probably about a month ago that that would be a long shot. I don't think that's that. I think Dwayne Harris is on this team. I think they need him to have a bounce-back year at both returner and to continue his solid play at gunner to really help that punt team continue to be one of the most underrated parts of this team. So I say Harris is on this team.
Awesome. All right. I mean, I can go up and down the whole roster. We've already
that was an abridged version of the round robin thing.
Well, I mean, listen, we already talked about the kicking position. We talked about everything. See, that's what we do here at Big Blue Kickoff. We get all of the information by bringing guys on like Art, who's awesome, by the way. We appreciate it, Art. And, you know, as always, we like having you on.
Feelings mutual with you guys, too, and anytime. And everybody have a safe weekend. Watch out for those cuts.
You as well, Art. Greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the record, kind enough to weigh in on what to expect in the final preseason game as we look ahead to the Giants and the Patriots coming up later today. Which brings us to our coverage later today. Our pregame show will start on WCBS News Radio 880 for those of you in the New York metropolitan area at 6:35. p.m. Eastern. We will lead you up to kickoff, and then Jeff and I will have a full postgame show immediately following the contest, as we will have four preseason games in the books at that point, and an opportunity to start to speculate on who will make the 53 and who won't. And then Friday, we'll be up and running with another BBKL at noon Eastern. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino will take you through a recap of the contest. And Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, Jeff, as you alluded to earlier, is the deadline to finalize the 53-man roster. And then the following day, Sunday, they will have to come up with their practice squad.
The term in football for when final cutdown dates come, for everybody who wants to know this, is no news is good news. You don't hear anything.
You don't want the phone to
ring. Don't do anything. Don't just go about your day. You know, you go shopping, whatever it is. Make sure your phone, if nobody's calling you and it's 4 p.m. on Saturday, you might want to stop into a bar and have a drink to celebrate because most likely you have made the team and nothing's happened. But the funny thing about this is there's so much that goes on between that Saturday and that you know, the next 3 days. So
it seems like forever, essentially.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. It's horrible for those young guys, you know. I mean, listen, if you're a Red Ellison, you know you made the team. You're an Ingram first round, you
Correct.
Made the team. But
Security's
some of these
there.
Guys that, like I said, there a lot of these guys' dreams come to an end on 4 o'clock on Saturday. It's unfortunate. And because a lot of the guys just, you know, they just fade away. They don't get picked up and then they call it quits.
Yep, so. And it's going to happen to, unfortunately, a lot of players, especially with 90 going to 53 for the first time in a long time, considering there's no 75-man cut. Well, we appreciate all of you for tuning in. We thank Jason Cole, who covers the NFL for Bleacher Report, joining in and talking about the NFC East, as well as Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the record, previewing the preseason game, as well as roster cuts. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We'll speak to you later tonight on WCBS News Radio 880. Have a good one right here on Giants.com.